it, tell me your story, new paradigms for a new world. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us. It's great to be with you every Sunday morning at 7 a.m., 7 p.m., and 1 a.m. Monday mornings. We also stream live at richarddugan.com, and we archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. We encourage you to go there and then go to the link to our guests' website. And today's link, I've not done this before, but maybe this is how we'll start doing this from now on as we head into 2017. ElaineLockhart.com. That's ElaineLockhart.com. ElaineLockhart.com. Gee, I wonder why we would use that particular website. Well, that's because returning to Tell Me Your Story is Elaine Lockhart. I want to thank you so much for joining us. You are the confident and a credibility alchemist, and also and the supreme resourceress.
Correct. It is a mouthful.
Yes, I just spoke a foreign language, ladies and gentlemen, and it's news to me. It's great to have you back on the program.
It's great to be here. Thank you for asking me back.
We have a lot that we can certainly talk about. One thing in particular, and I'm going to say actually two things, because you have two stories that are in a compilation volume that is out now. First of all, tell us about this wonderful compilation, this book that you are a part of. You didn't actually write the book, but you wrote two stories in it, which I have read, and I really like them. I love the message in them.
Well, thank you very much. I had been looking for some sort of collaborative book to become a part of for a while, because I have some ideas about writing a book on my own, and I have written two books, but they're like little e-books, but a fully printed book I had not written. And so a friend of mine by the name of Jody Chapman and her husband Dan Tech had started a book series called the 365 Book Series, and their second book was called 365 Moments of Grace. I forget off the top of my head what the first book was, but it just sounded really interesting, and I decided to participate in it and write two of the articles. And as the name would indicate, there's an article for each day of the year, 365 days of the year. So I've written two articles for this book, and they have another book that's going to be coming out in February called 365 Life Shifts, and I'm going to be writing a couple articles for that too. So it's very inspirational, and it's, you know, about moments in people's lives. These are true stories from the authors. I think it's about there's over 250 different authors in the book, and they're all true stories of times in their life when they felt touched by grace in some way. And so, yeah, it was very, very nice, and the book is just fabulous.
And when we chatted about this book, I began thinking, as you were sharing the concept of this as well as the other, I began thinking of the various experiences in my life that, you know, I could put down into paper. Matter of fact, I actually submitted my book, which most people know I've been working on for 15 years, and I got some nice a nice review, if you will, from him. I wasn't seeking it; it was just a nice comment that he made about how, as he saw it, I was able to tell stories fairly well. Of course, I can always use any suggestions in terms of improvement, but that was kind of nice to hear. And I got to thinking about that in terms of these kinds of stories of inspiration, whether, regardless of what time in our lives. And so I think that, and we all have them. Every person has these stories, but we don't often think about it. And you obviously have a lot of stories that you could share if a particular phrase were given to you saying, look, Elaine, I'd like you to share with us an inspirational story of friendship or of parenthood or of, and you know, whatever the category is. And all of a sudden, your mind just starts to fly to that place. And you see the images from your past. And then you start putting that down. And not everybody can write it. Sometimes you might have to get a ghostwriter. But we all have those stories, and I think I'm curious as from your perspective as to the importance of sharing those stories, whether it's in a compilation such as you are a part of now, or if they were to put together their own I don't know that you necessarily would call it a memoir, but, you know, for lack of a better word.
So you want to know
your
my viewpoint, your
view on people sharing these kinds of stories with others, the value that that can have.
Well, I think the biggest thing is that you're not alone. Everybody tends to think that either the way they do things or the way they think things should be done is the norm, and no one else would believe them or understand them because they wouldn't have gone through the same thing. Everyone can say that their story in some way is unique to them, but in generalities, it's not unique because someone else has had something similar happen to them. And it gives hope. It gives warm and fuzzy feelings. It helps you to feel that you are better than you think you are, that you are good enough. It just inspires you in so many different ways. And hope is a big one. Hope was a theme, I think, for probably both of my stories that I wrote. I think hope was a big part of them, but also they were just something that was unique and magical, and I think comforting about them. And inspiration in general inspires people in so many different ways, and it's necessary in our lives because our lives can get to be so much of a drudgery at times. And we want happiness, and we want to know that we matter and that we're a part of something and we are appreciated. And anything like this helps you to know that, you know, you can have that, other people have that, and there are people that understand.
And in these times, that is extremely important because so many people are feeling, and this seems to be the word that is used quite often, I hear it all the time, so many people feel disenfranchised. They feel as though they don't matter anymore, that the institutions, the powers that be, the systems, some will call it the machine, you know, or whatever term you want to give it, is so impersonal that, you know, it's like as long as you continue to buy, you know, you consume and produce and consume and produce, that's all that matters. And there's no need to think of anything more in life than consuming and producing. And it's like there's so much more. I mean, I wouldn't be doing this program as long as I have and been on my search as long as I have if I didn't think there was more to life than just that.
And, you know, it's so interesting that people are feeling more and more like that nowadays. And at the same time, those very people and others are using social media and electronic means of communicating rather than and putting themselves behind an electronic wall in a lot of ways, and which actually can distance them more in some ways. And in other ways, if somebody's like has a phobia or something and doesn't go out in the public or has a chronic condition and can't get out of the house and things like that, it's a way for them to stay in touch with people, yes. And I don't mean that this is a straight across the board, but it's interesting that the one thing that would help people to feel more a part of something is if they were to get out and actually talk to people, if it was actually talk to people on a phone where you're actually voice-to-voice contact rather than this electronic texting. It's so neutral, and it's so unlively. There's no life to it in a lot of ways. And you kind of wonder the chicken and the egg here. What came first and what's kind of, you know, keeping it going and keeping it perpetuated. It's quite of an interesting dynamic.
Well, and we have certainly certain elements of this technology that allows us to communicate in this fashion. I mean, we're talking here. I would say that ostensibly still, it's still a telephone. It's just a cleaner signal. It's almost as if you're right here in studio with me using an internet interface, if you will, called Skype. And the only, like I said, the only difference is it's just cleaner. And if we wanted to, we could do video if I had a camera at my end. I know you do. And so forth. But, and I've often thought about that. You know, there was a statement made to me not too long ago that we have had no innovations in our civilization in a lot of years. And some would say, well, yeah, but I mean, we not only as far as the 20th century, we had, you know, flying was an innovation. We never flew before. Yeah, but what was the point of flying? Not just to fly, it was to get from point A to point B. Now, some people obviously do fly because they love being up there like the birds. Some would say that, different things that have come along technologically over the last 100, 150 years, those are innovations. And I say, well, not really, because they're still allowing us to do the same thing we were always doing, just differently. But we're still, it's still like a form of communication or distraction, if you will. And I think that the I have to chuckle at this. The latest innovation, or at least invention, if you will, or application, if you will, is this. If I can remember even the name of it, but it's that thing that the people have on their phones, you know, where they can search the throughout their neighborhood or their city or what have you for these little animated creatures that they can collect or something. I don't even know the purpose of it.
The Pokemon Go, but yeah, I agree with you. I have no idea what the purpose of it is either, other than a game.
Yeah, and I mean, games are fun. Sure, I played Monopoly, and I played tag, and I played, soccer and kick. I play soccer with my dog all the time. But the end game there is we're having fun. We're just, and maybe people are enjoying that. But, you know, I've heard of a few people who have gotten so into it, they lose track of where they're walking and end up in some precarious situations, good either. So when you talk about this, in a manner of speaking, it's sort of a disconnect from the way that we were designed to be, if you will. The way that I'm using these in more metaphorical terms, the way that we were created to be, and that was connected. And connected on a physical level, whereas again these other methods we're not really connected. You know, talk about social media is anything but social. The comment has been made that likes on Facebook. I don't even know these people. How can they like me? They don't even know me. You know, and some would say, well, yeah, but I mean, you know, these are people who are part of the human race, and we should like everybody. Well, I understand that, but. Like in a website called LinkedIn, you know, you can send endorsements. I get endorsements from people I've never heard of before. I've endorsed hardly anybody because unless I know who they are. For example, if I was to endorse you, yes, I could because I know you. We've communicated. We have talked. And we've had great conversations over the last few years. Speaking of conversations, Elaine Lockhart has a website that I did mention, elainelockhart.com, and she has, I think, some really neat stuff. Now, tell me a little bit about this whole aspect of being the confidence and credibility alchemist and supreme resourceress, which, by the way, I like. Did you create that word resourceress? It looks like you have a TM there, trademark.
Well, no, the whole title is trademarked. A colleague gave me that moniker, I guess you could say.
Wow.
That name. She knows me very well, and we were talking one day, and she says, you know, you're a resourceress. Now, I did happen to look on the web, and there was one person that used the term resourceress in their title. It was the Red Resourceress or something mm-hmm. or other. I forget exactly what, but I only saw it one place, and it was only one page on Google. It was no more than one page. And so it didn't appear to be a trademark term. So it does describe very much what I have felt that I have been my whole life. And one of the first ways my intuition showed up in my life, since I am a professional intuitive and use it all the time in the work that I do. I used to call myself an information gatherer because I always seemed to be at the right place in the right time to get a piece of information that either I or someone else had needed just hours or days before, or hours or days to come. And I've always been a very practical person. I like logistics, how things work. And I'm always asking questions. So I seem to be an information person. I just gather information. And I've always been good at connecting people and all of that. So resourcerous just really, really fits a very, I guess you could say, a talent of mine, or just something that my intuition allows me to have. And then the confidence and credibility alchemist part, those came from three of my best girlfriends. I wanted to find something that, of course, you know, when you're in business on the internet, you need to have something catchy, okay? Mm-hmm. So I wanted something they call a fame name. And I played around with all kinds of words and stuff, and they just didn't work. And when I talked to them, I knew the three of them, even before I even knew what coaching was, they all had, they were all spiritual entrepreneurs. They all had their own healing businesses. One of them was a coach, and, or I should say, is a coach. And they all were having difficulties dealing with their stuff, their life stuff that was getting in their way of fully expressing themselves in their spirituality through their work. And, you know, they were kind of afraid and had doubts and all this other kind of stuff. And through my natural interaction with them, because I had gone to them for health reasons. And so I was just naturally talking with them when I was there for appointments and stuff. And through my natural interaction with them, they were able to come out of what I call their spiritual closets and get the confidence to go ahead and start putting themselves more and more out there. And in turn, they became very much more credible, and their businesses just took off. So that's what I do. It's a natural thing that I do in talking with people. Ideas start rolling. I start getting information about, or deeper information about, what might be going on with them. And I also have some very practical tools I use too to help dig a bit deeper to find out those aspects. But it's a natural process that just happens when I get on the phone. A lot of times I'll be talking with the person, meeting them for a first time. It might be like a little connection chat or something, just to meet and greet someone. And ideas will start popping, or information will start flowing, and they end up having a whole coaching session with me because I just can't turn it off. It just naturally flows, and that's the way I work. And I also know, just from my own experience in my life, that information, knowledge, it's the old quote, knowledge is power, but self-knowledge is really the most powerful knowledge there is. And so, yeah, it just fits. It fits exactly what I do and who I am.
So if it's something that you can't or don't choose to, quote unquote, turn off, then how do you, maybe another word, how do you filter it so that it's not sort of taking over your entire life, if you follow where I'm going with this, in order to... in order to live your life? I mean, you have, certainly this is part of who and what you are, just as, I mean, I wouldn't be doing interviews 24/7. I mean, it would be a wonderful Guinness Book of World Records, but I've got other things that I'd like to do too, like go down to the beach and wade in the water. but I'm just curious as to how you balance that.
Well, I think we're talking about two different things.
Okay.
The intuition and the way it presents itself just naturally presents itself as part of my life. It doesn't stand out as anything different. It's when I'm applying it in my work, which I set schedules and I have appointments and things of that sort, as to I utilize it in that fashion. So you have to you have to differentiate between the two. Mm-hmm. My intuition's always here. Spirit will send me information, or my guides or teachers will send me information, or they'll guide me to information. But it's not that it rules my life. It's just a natural part of my life. It's like growing up with a habit or a certain way you do things, or having a pain that you always have when the storm's coming or something. It's a natural part of your life that doesn't rule it. It's just there.
Yeah.
And it's just using that inside of my business.
So when you are... was this something that from a very early age that it was just, it was a natural part of, as you say, of who
yes.
and what you are? It's always been there. You've never known a time in your life where it hasn't been.
Correct.
So that,
and as I said, I used to call myself an information gatherer. It's
right.
always been there. Yeah.
So have you, and so I would venture you have never struggled with the... with the promptings. In other words, if your intuition asks you to do something, and this is the kind of the way that I put it, if you're being directed or guided to go in a particular direction, you just flat out, you don't resist. You just go.
Oh, no. It's not that easy.
Okay.
Some people have gotten to the point with their intuition that they recognize it right off the bat, they follow it explicitly, and they never struggle with it. But I think even those people at times may struggle with it because they may have other things they want to do, or they just decide, well, I'll put that aside or to one place aside for a while and maybe don't listen to it as much as they did. But most people with their intuition struggle with it because, first of all, you don't know what it is. I mean, when you're a child and growing up, you don't necessarily know what it is. You may follow it easier when you're a child because you don't question as much. But as you get older, you can struggle with it because you start questioning. You don't understand what it is. You don't really understand how it's manifesting in you. And it's different for everyone. There's some general things that may occur, but generally, everybody usually has their own unique take on things, but they don't necessarily know that. This is where a lot of people get stuck in thinking that it should be a certain way when for them it should be a different way and is a different way. So you have to learn a lot of times to trust that intuition, to recognize it, trust it, and recognize it for what it is to implement it in your life. And there's still times that I'll get an intuitive hit and not necessarily realize it, but realize it later on in 2020 hindsight.
Been there. I had an. I've used this example many, many times. When I used to bicycle everywhere before I was able to drive, I was bicycling to and from work back in Phoenix. Ostensibly, it was about a five mile bike ride every day one way, and. This one day, I was bicycling to work in the afternoon because I was working the late shift. And I had this impression that as I was coming to this intersection that I was to turn right to go north, which was actually going out of my way, and then continue west and then go south again at the next intersection, which was basically a 3 mile detour. And I went straight through the intersection and continued down the road about a half mile. And the prompting kept getting stronger and stronger to the point where it was like, I couldn't ignore it anymore. So I kid you not, I turned the bike around. I went back to the intersection. And of course, this time I make a left turn. And then I make the left turn and the left turn. In other words, I do the 3 mile detour. And I get back down onto the road that I was originally on in the first place and continue on and I get to work. I have no idea why I was directed to do that. Did I avoid an accident? Was this a safer route that particular day? I have no clue. I probably never will. But it was at that point that I realized, and when I was in one of these personal growth programs, they asked us to write down this phrase on this big piece of construction paper. It was at that point that I realized and wrote it down as, I will listen to, and then in all caps, very bold printing, and follow the promptings. Because as I've joked with people, if you're not going to follow them, what's the point in listening? Mm-hmm. You know? So I've kind of learned, and that's not to say that, okay, from that point forward, I've always listened to and followed the promptings. No, I've struggled with that. But what about those of us, Elaine, who come to you, and when I've gone to intuitives, I've taken the perspective that I just need confirmation. I'm not asking them to tell me something I don't know. I already know this, but it's like I just don't have the confidence to trust yet. So I'm going to this person and saying, what are you picking up on this? Can you give me some insight? And I know that, of course, everything is in flux as well. But that's my perspective is going to, I would come to you and say, Elaine, can you give me some insight on, as opposed to, could you predict my future? And I think that has changed over the years, probably in the last 20 or 30 years, that I think that that's more the perspective that people get. Is that your take on that?
Yes, it's more so that way. That's one of the reasons I don't call myself a psychic. You know, 20, 30 years ago, psychic would have been when I turned myself. But I have experienced so many people that have gone to a psychic and have had their fortune told or their future predicted for them, or have asked questions like, you know, should I get married to this guy or should I move? And they are given definitive answers. And I have seen how those answers in some parts have ruined their lives. Other parts have helped their lives. But that's one of the reasons I refuse to use the term psychic, because I don't want somebody to come to me thinking that I'm going to predict something for them.
You're not an oracle.
I'm not an oracle. And as you said, as soon as you say something to a person and answer a question for them, it's that butterfly effect. Things start changing. In that moment, what you see may be true. But in the next moment, once you put it out there and touched in with it and put the energy out there, things can start changing because people have free will. They don't have to follow what you say. They don't have to agree with what you see or say. And there's too many variables. So I will not predict someone's future. I will happily give you insight. I will happily coach you through some things so that you can kind of weigh some pros and cons and figure out for yourself what you feel is best for you in your heart of hearts. But I will not predict a future. I will, you know, I'll talk about possibilities and opportunities, but I will not predict a future.
As a lot of the science fiction these days talks of, these alternative timelines, as it were.
Exactly. That's exactly it. Yes.
Yeah. So I'm curious, as we speak here, during the cycle that we have gone through, this election cycle that we've gone through, not asking for any specifics whatsoever, but just asking if that's something that you even tune into, if it is something that even manifests in your intuition, are those the kinds of worldly things? And I mean, that's very, very base, very worldly. I would almost even use the term dark realm to even contemplate. But do you get any impressions as far as how these kinds of things unfold? And again, I'm not asking for any predictions of any kind. I'm just asking for your impressions. Have you picked anything up? Or I should say, in a general sense, do you pick up anything when these kinds of huge, major, long-term events are going on?
Once in a while, I may. But in terms of like the political arena nowadays, politics is not something that I'm interested in. Not that I'm not interested in knowing a candidate and voting for them. It's just in general, like, right. I didn't take politics in college. I just didn't care for the topic. and I don't understand all of the different terminologies and stuff. Mm-hmm. So since it isn't something that I'm interested in that fashion, then I just don't tune into it, and I don't learn enough about it to be able to know all of the terminology and how things run to even begin to apply intuition to it in any real form. So, okay. No, if it's something I'm interested in, mm-hmm. then, and something I've also explored or discussed with someone, then I might pick up some intuitive hits, but no, I just don't operate that way. I'm not one to get into something like that when I'm not really that interested in it.
And of course, so then you deal very much on an individual basis. It's really where the intuition is most, shall we say, most effective, or maybe even most appreciated and gratefully accepted, is on an individual basis with that kind of, as you say, guidance, you know, or confirmation, as I use the word.
Yes. Yeah, I very much prefer to work individually. I do have some groups and I do work with some groups, but I also like it individually because I can lay here on my futon in my office with my eyes closed. That's the way I like to work. I don't do video or anything like that when I work with someone, and I don't do people in person because it's too distracting. I rather lay here, my eyes closed, and listen very deeply. And mm-hmm. that's where the connections happen. And that's where the information starts flowing. And that's where that's where the magic happens. And it's just consistently is just the way I work.
Now, I do understand what you're saying, but you do know that there are some people saying, gee, I wish I had a job like that. Elaine Lockhart is my guest. We're talking about her work, both the alchemist as well as intuitive work, and we're going to continue. We're going to talk a little bit more about these stories that you've written. I would like to get into those just a little bit as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we're here with Elaine Lockhart. ElaineLockhart.com. Elaine, as it is, E-L-I-A-A. Oh, my Lord. I have a sister named Elaine, and I always used to play around with that and get it like my sister Cecilia, C-E-C-E-L-I-A. It was so easy. But anyway, Elaine Lockhart, ElaineLockhart is the website with a .com at the end there. And we encourage you to check that out. Tell me, in terms of the whole concept of alchemy, it's symbolic story, I suppose you might say, maybe sort of having the Midas touch of, you know, being able to turn things into gold, or maybe more appropriately, being able to turn other things into gold through a process, a more mystical and esoteric, or some might even say occult process. But we're talking here about your process of alchemy in helping. If this is correct, and correct me if I am wrong, in helping to transform people's lives.
Let me give you a response that a lady gave me after talking to her for 15 minutes. She said, you know, when we started this call, I felt like I had nowhere to turn. Everything was going wrong. And she said, now I feel so much better, and I'm happy, and I know that there are places to go. There are things to do. It's not as bad as I thought it was. She had a total shift in mindset in 15 minutes, and that was just through us talking.
Mm.
And as I said, I call it magic, and I also call it alchemy. It's that energetic connection and conversation and reaction between two people that can help the other person change their mindset, make a transformation in their life, get rid of some of their stuff, and grow and be better in who they are in every way. I just came up with a phrase recently, and I haven't looked at it on the web. It's probably been used by someone else because it's too, too commonplace not to have been used somewhere. But I like using the term spiritual biology. You know, we know our own biology fairly well. We know if we have food allergies and if our knee creaks and stuff like that. We know our physical reality. We know our physical biology fairly well. But our spiritual biology, we usually know very little about, and it is every bit as important as our physical biology and our physical existence. And for me, when I started learning more about my spiritual biology and all the different esoteric things that come along with that, that's where I got my answers to help me in my life, in my healing of my own self, in helping me to understand, helping me to have hope, helping me to have courage. If I hadn't had that, without going into a lot of personal detail, I very well may not be here today. And part of that could always have the possibility of not being here today by my own hand.
And I do understand that. And there are folks who feel that way. I know of someone in particular who lost their father and 4 months later lost their mother. And then a few months later, and all in 1 year, lost their best friend on the operating table. And wondered why they got to leave and she couldn't. I mean, she's just very, very angry because all of these very important people had left, you know. And I've known people since I moved to Santa Barbara who have, and this being, you know, a much older community, I've known people who have gone through a year where they're just losing people, friends and associates and family members left and right. And you know, and not to be in any way dispassionate, but that is the natural order of things. That's what happens when we come into this world. It's like you're born to die. You just don't know how long you're going to be here before that happens. And it's just part of the process. But it doesn't help because we become attached. I would venture that from your experiences and your knowledge base, we haven't really found a good way of really coping with that particular element of I'm going to call it part of our existence, because it is. It might be the last part, but it's still part of our existence, because I'm going to die, and so are you. But hopefully we've touched some people along the way. But what are your perspectives on dealing with that particular realm of humanity?
Well, you know, there's that quote that I'm a spiritual being having a human experience. And humanity and being in a physical realm has its pros and cons. And being in the spiritual realm has its pros and cons. And trying to find a way to align the two so that you can be as happy and as comfortable and flow as easily as possible through this life is always a challenge. And our souls, our spirits, at least this is what I believe, come into this life to use all of these mundane, trudging through muck, trudging through and experiencing emotion and all of these senses of eating food and smelling and tasting and seeing, all of these different things are to help our soul's energy learn more about the universe that's been created by God or truth or Godhead, whatever terminology anybody wants to use for God. And we're here as a learning experience. It's easy for some. It's not easy for others, and it's always a roller coaster ride. So, you know, everybody, everybody puts their pants on one leg at a time. And, you know, everybody has to go to the bathroom. You know, everybody does certain things. It's just natural things to life. but we all go through it differently. It all impacts us differently. And everyone is going to have a certain amount, some more than others, of stuff that they've got to deal with. And that's just part of being human. It's part of living in this world. But the spiritual part can help to make it easier. And sometimes it's more of just an understanding and acceptance. And other times it's completely transforming it and turning it around.
Mm. Well, I know that again, it is part of it. I think about what my reaction will be when my parents pass away. And that's all fine, well, and good, as I have been told. But you have no idea what you're going to go through when that happens. This is what I was told. And I guess, and you can't, it's not something you prepare for. I mean, maybe as an individual who's going through that transitional process, you can prepare for it, even though we're not consciously aware of what's going to happen. And maybe we can dispel some of the fear and angst and so forth, which is what we've tried to do with some programs on this topic. But as far as one who is experiencing someone else going through that, that's a hard one. I still remember when my dear friend Dave passed away back in 2003, and I'd seen different programs about people going through the grieving process and so on and so forth, and thought, oh wow, that's pretty dramatic. Wow. And I remember it was he passed on October the 10th of that year, and I think that was a Friday. And my wife and I were in bed lying there just trying to gather up enough strength to get up and make dinner or something. And all of the sudden, I just got mad. And I was, even as the observer, even in that moment, I was able to go, where did this come from? But it was one of those things I just couldn't stop. Fortunately, I didn't pick things up and throw them around per se, but I was just so angry that he had left, you know, and so forth. And it's like, wow. So it's kind of hard to know exactly what our reactions are going to be, but I think that it would behoove us to, you know, sort of be ready for that. I mean, I look at my parents these days, not so much as parents, as much as really good friends. I had the great privilege of interviewing them a year ago, as part of this radio program, although it is not available for I'm honoring my parents' request not to air it, but I made it available to the family, and it was great fun to do because I had to do it detached as the son. That was a very interesting experience. When we talk about these stories that you have written, in regards to this new compilation, as we'll call it, what was the first thing that was put to you that you were asked to do when that inspired these two stories in particular?
I just thought about times in my life that would fit what I thought were moments of grace, and these two stories came to mind. You were saying earlier that you could probably think of a lot of things, and yeah, in general you can, and I've had other things kind of pop up from time to time. Oh, I could have written about that, I could have written about that, but when you're in the moment trying to think of them, you can't think of anything. As a matter of fact, I've been writing notes when I come up with ones for the next ones to make sure that I pick two that I really want to write about.
Yeah.
But these were just ones that finally came to mind that, yeah, these were stories that really did have a special exclamation point on them in your life,
mm-hmm.
in my life, that really moved me. And I still tear up about them.
Well, I know that one in particular for me, you start thinking about stories, and even when you mention just the emotional response, and I was really surprised the first time I told a story, and I started getting choked up, going, again, where did this come from? You know, because of what it meant to me. I'm a huge baseball fan, not a real team fan. I used to have a team. They were the Diamondbacks of Arizona because that's where I'm from. And growing up, loved baseball, listened to the Dodgers playing on local radio in Phoenix. And I was a Dodgers fan just because that's what I was listening to. And then, of course, we get the team in the mid-90s thinking, oh, that's great. But, yeah, God, it's going to be years before they ever make it. And then they get into the playoffs. And within 4 years, the next thing I know, oh, my gosh, they're in the World Series. Ah, they'll never win, especially playing against the Yankees. The next thing I know, now I'm able to say I'm from a World Series town. Well, the story has to do with my father. And you know, Elaine, as well as I do, that the sort of the typical or traditional story about dad taking his son to a ball game for the first time. My dad didn't do that. I took him to a ball game. And it was just the neatest experience. He had bad vision and we were up in the cheap seats, so he couldn't see real well. So we went down into one of the restaurants that was along the outfield line and we watched on one of the big screens. We watched the game, sat and talked, and it was great. And I think that when we start talking about all of these different kinds of stories and what spurs them, I think you're taking a good approach, Elaine, and that is taking notes as you go along.
Yeah, because if you take the concept, okay, just this moments of grace in your life, and this can be a little bit of a homework for your people that are listening, just keep that in the back of your mind, moments of grace in your life, and keep a little notebook or someplace that you can get to. And when you think of one, write them down. And I will guarantee you that you are going to come up with a lot of them. Now, it might take you a few days. It might take you a few months because it'll be something that'll spark a memory that you've kind of forgotten or buried in the back of your mind. But everybody has moments of grace. You know, one that... Well, a couple that are very big for anybody's life is a birth of a child or a grandchild. And then, of course, then, as you just said, a death of someone that you're very close to. Those are times that can be moments of grace for anybody. A wedding, anything like that can be moments of grace. But there's a lot of other special ones that can happen also.
And I think it's incumbent upon us to try to remember those. I love the saying, and I don't know where it comes from exactly, but those who have gone on before us, who have transitioned already, they only truly die when there is no one left to remember them. And I've seen some great science fiction programs that are based upon that theme. One in particular where a civilization that's been dead for thousands of years, but they had such advanced technology in their time. They sent out this probe that managed to find other humanoid-like people and latched onto one individual and gave him an internal story. He lived his entire lifetime within that mental image of these people, and now he has their memories, and they now live on again.
Yes.
I thought, wow.
You know, and think about that, you know, a lot of everything that we have in this world is energy. Everything is made of energy. This has been proven by science, you know, the atoms and subatomic particles, all those, everything is energy. It's solid to us. But everything is made of energy. There isn't that anything that isn't made of energy. It can be broken down in energy. And going from life into death is just a transformation of energy. And it doesn't, as you said, it doesn't really become dead unless someone just totally forgets about them, because that energy is always there. And when you remember them or you give them life in some fashion, they become alive again, even if it's in memories, even if it's in a purely energetic form.
Yeah. I it's such a, from my perspective, it's such a neat concept. It really is.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I mean, matter of fact, it was interesting. The other day I was thinking about my mother's father, my grandfather, and I can't even remember we were looking at some Western pictures on a wall somewhere. I happened to see them and remembering the types of pictures that he had on the walls in their home back in Florence, Arizona. One in particular was a giant wooden, it was an oval frame, wooden oval frame, but it was with a piece of glass that was like a dome over the top. And I was not as impressed so much by the picture, although I remember it was a picture of him, as much as I was of the way it was displayed in this giant under glass kind of thing. It wasn't a flat piece of glass. It was really kind of cool. And he was definitely the consummate cowboy and, you know, he's just all of these different things. And I've kind of taken on a little bit of that because my style of dress is more of the Western. And when I'm walking down State Street, people will compliment me on my hat. And I'm thinking, they wouldn't even notice me if I wasn't wearing this hat. But that's okay. That's all right. Anonymity is always a good thing, too. Again, as you go through your day, I mean, have you had a notebook with you? Just a little pad of paper. Jot down some of those thoughts that cross your mind.
And, exactly.
You know, it can be so profound. So profound.
It can be very profound. And, you know, we were talking about intuition earlier. You know, a lot of people, well, everybody has intuition, whether they believe that they do or don't. Everybody has intuition. And what's difficult for a lot of people is learning what's intuition and what's their normal thought patterns. And writing down things like that and keeping a journal of things that occur to you or thoughts that occur was one of the ways to help a person learn to trust and know their intuition.
I know the argument has been made, at least when I've brought the subject up. How can you be sure that the voice that you're listening to is that of, say, your higher self or the guidance from, and I'll use the term God, so that you're not going down a road where these voices are telling you to do harm to yourself or others. You know where I'm going with this.
Mm-hmm. No.
Any answers? Any suggestions?
Well, you've got to learn what is your intuition, what isn't. And one of the things that the ways I was taught was to play and experiment. And we'd get out a deck of cards and we tried to guess the card, or if it was just red or if it was a diamond or something like that. You mentioned earlier about confirmation, being able to do some sort of an intuitive practice or game or example and get immediate feedback and confirmation. That way you're in the moment and you can start understanding how the intuition feels as opposed to how your own thoughts feel. And the more you get confirmation, the more you trust yourself and the more your intuition opens up more and more and more. And it's actually more of the intuition is always there. It's more of your trusting opens up more and more. And you then start realizing the intuition's always there and knowing when to listen and when not to. It's a process, but it's a practice makes perfect type process, and getting confirmations are really, really great. I have clients where we have play dates. You know, they're starting to grow in their intuition and they want to use maybe oracle cards or do different types of readings, and we'll do play dates and they'll read for me and I'm able to give them immediate feedback and make suggestions and things of that sort. We did that all the time when I was going through my studies. We'd always pair up and do different things and try different practices on one another so that we could get the feel of it and the understanding of it.
What would you say is the, or maybe one of the most important elements that you bring to another person in your capacity as this alchemist, this resourceress?
I like to use the word hope, and I've used that to also mean having one's power emerge, and that power being your confidence, your truth, your abilities, your gifts, whatever is authentically or really you, who is the real you. And so I like to use, I like the term hope.
Hmm. Well, we certainly all could use some hope at various times. A lot of folks are very concerned about, of course, world events in particular. It's just so much that seems to be going on. But then I've also heard it said from the more pragmatic individuals that there's no more going on now than there was 5,000 years ago. It's just that we have what we call the media and the internet that brings all of these events to us almost instantaneously. And I think some folks just get overwhelmed.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely correct. It's like I explain to my clients at times when they talk about life lessons. You know, why do we keep learning things over and over again, or the same thing over and over again? Well, you have to look at it as there's only really, if you look in general terms, a limited number of lessons to learn. But as we grow and we change, we move up to different levels of our understanding, of our maturity, and these lessons come around again so that they're meant to be learned at a different level, in a different way, from a different perspective. It's like starting in the mailroom of a corporation building down in the basement. You've got all your standard operating procedures and all the lessons that you've got to learn down there. And once you learned all those, you move up to the first floor and you got the same things to learn over again, but you're at a different level, different aspects, different perspectives, and you just keep climbing from there.
Yeah. You teach people, as you said, you do teach people how to access, listen to those voices, but it really, it's up to them as to whether or not they follow the promptings.
Always. It's always up to the person. It's always their choice.
What are some of the basic steps that you take someone through? I mean, let's just talk about the first step or two. What would be the first thing that you would tell someone, or, you know, where do you begin?
Well, okay, let's just take it in terms of my coaching and mentoring in general. If I sign on a new client, one of the first things I like to do is have them know more about themselves and what makes them tick, why things are happening the way they are, like their life purpose and why they're learning certain lessons. And I have a very practical tool that I use through numerology, and I do a numerology soul chart for them. It's something like astrology, but astrology is just so much more complicated. Numerology is very, very practical and down to earth, and it helps them to understand some of the whys in their life. They tell you not to approach whys in coaching, but you know, when it comes to life purpose and direction and really wanting to know, you know, why does this always bother me? Why am I always having trust issues, things of this sort? Then this is a good place to help them to understand how they handle things, help them to understand their process, to bring that into their conscious awareness so that they can use it, they can leverage it in what they're doing and the decisions they're making, the choices they're making for themselves. And when we go through this and learn more about them, the conversation naturally brings up, yeah, this is going on, that's going on, now understand that, this makes more sense. And then that starts giving us a game plan based on their intentions of what the coaching is to do for them. And we can really know more about how to approach things and where to go from there to do what's best for them. Because I always like to style my coaching and mentoring to what's appropriate for the person, because everyone's different. And unless they're being taken through a specific program to do a specific thing, then my general one-on-one coaching is very customized to the person and what's needed for them.
I think that the work that you're doing is quite extraordinary because there are not a lot of people that are doing this. There are a number, I know, but not a whole lot of people. And there are a lot of folks that need the guidance. They need the support. They need the confirmation. They need the assistance, the help, whatever you want to use. And for you to be there for them. And I, again, I am one of those who wish that I had a job like yours, that I could just lay on the couch in the dark and talk with these folks. But it's, I know that it's more than that. I know that it's a lot more than that because it, I would assume it takes a lot out of you.
Well, it can at times, yeah. When you have like four or five clients in one day, you're doing things back to back, it can be a little draining. But at the same time, it can be invigorating. It just, you know, just like everybody else, you have your good days or not so good days.
Yeah. So you've been doing this for quite a number of years.
7 years of coaching, but I will say that, there again, in 2020 hindsight, I've been doing it all my life and didn't know it.
And it's not something that you have any plans, of course, on changing. It's something that it just continues. Seems like it just continues to grow.
It continues to grow. It continues to transform. New gifts show up. Things that I didn't realize I was doing kind of come into my awareness. It's fascinating. It things are always evolving, and it's quite nice, actually. It keeps things from being too boring.
So share with me a little bit of this evolutionary process, if you would, please. What are some of the changes that maybe that you could share with us that have maybe shown up in just the 21st century here in the last 16 years?
What do you mean, in me?
Yeah, I mean it sounds to me like you've added to your toolbox, so to speak.
Well, I think the biggest thing, and I think anybody that's had any personal development work done or have gone through any personal development work, it changes you. It changes your outlook. It changes so many things about you. It can change how you handle stress. It can change your total mindset on how you approach life. And one of the things that I've learned, and other coaches will agree, is that being a coach, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say this probably happens to psychologists and therapists too, that when you are doing the work, you're also changing you and working on yourself. You go through periods where the work will throw in your face your own limitations or your own struggles or your own hurdles that you're working to get through. And you'll go through times when you're doing a lot of interpersonal work. It's just part of the growth. It's just the way life will throw lessons at you. But since you're in the work, in doing the work of helping people with their lessons, then those things also kind of get thrown up to you, and it brings yours to the surface to get worked on. So it can be a bit of a roller coaster ride. And 15, 16 years ago, I started a downhill slide with my health, and there again, through my spirituality and the work that I was doing and some classes that I was taking and the ever-ending questioning and search for answers, it helped me to come out of that hole of pain and everything that I was in, and be healthier today in so many ways than I was 15 years ago.
You know, I've gotten the comment many, many times in the last 9 years that we've been doing this program. And it's, well, you seem to have the same people on talking about the same things over and over again. And my comment to them is, number one is, well, don't you get the point? They're all saying the same thing. But it's more from the standpoint that, yes, we talk about transitioning, we talk about intuition, and we talk about all the different aspects of life and living on a spiritual, metaphysical level and so forth. But the point of having the diversity of people on is to say, look, what the person who said last week may not have resonated with you, but this week maybe it might. And if this one doesn't, then tune in again next week and see, or go to the archives. And I even received an email not too long ago, Elaine, from a woman back east who says that she listens. She has listened for the last several months to all of my archives just before she went to bed. I'm not necessarily sure what that means, but she really enjoys the programs and is quite intrigued by each of the guests and the conversation that we have. Now, whether or not she resonated with every single program, and we're talking about 9 years worth, or just a few of them that popped, you know, that popped up, and she's just kind of searching through. It's kind of like flipping through the pages of a book, a 900-page book. That's really kind of the point, is that if this person isn't to your liking, doesn't, you know, resonate with you, you don't pick up on their vibration or what have you, then try the next one and then the next one. I mean, that's the whole point of getting a second and a third and a fourth and a fifth opinion. You know, I would say get in touch with Elaine Lockhart at elainelockhart.com and see what she has to offer you and see if it works and resonates for you. Can you tell us a little bit about the New Path for Life?
Well, New Path for Life is my company name. And actually it came from a previous multi-level marketing company that I joined, that a girlfriend of mine was a part of. I joined for about a year, and she needed to give me a password for my access to the website. And she said Spirit gave her the word New Path. And I was starting, this was a new venture, so New Path was there. And then when I discovered coaching, which in and of itself for me was a kind of a grace moment. I thought, what do I want for my company name? And it immediately came to me, New Path for Life, because that's what coaching and mentoring can do. It can help you start down a new path in your life.
And so when you're coaching someone, do you have them run laps or do push-ups and things like that?
No, but they do get homework at times, which can be some mental push-ups.
So there are all different kinds of coaching. And maybe this is on an individual basis, but what kind of coaching is it that you're doing?
Spiritual, life, business, executive.
And people can get in touch with you through your website, of course, as we've mentioned, elainelockhart.com, or your email address is elaine@elainelockhart.com.
Correct.
And you're way over there on the East Coast.
I'm in Virginia, right in the middle of the Mid-Atlantic, yep.
Yeah. And we certainly hope you stay safe when the hurricane season starts or as it rolls through and passes you by. Yeah, and that's one interesting thing, too. I've noticed that in the last 15 or 20 years, it used to be that the hurricanes would go up the eastern seaboard. And aside from the one big old Sandy storm, that's what they called it, Hurricane Sandy, that went up all the way up into New York, most of them have been going across Florida and into the Gulf. I find that really kind of interesting, the way these patterns are changing around the world. But that's another subject for another time. But anyway, we hope that...
I wouldn't necessarily agree with that.
No?
We follow them so closely here on the East Coast. I wouldn't necessarily agree with that one.
Okay. Well, I don't live there, so I have no point.
If anybody else would like to have a conversation with me, a complimentary conversation, if they just go to my website, elainelockhart.com, at the very bottom of the homepage, there's a link to schedule a short connection chat with me. I'd love to meet somebody, and we can talk for a few minutes and meet and greet and see how we blend together, how we meld together.
That's right. Schedule a 15-minute complimentary connection chat with Elaine Lockhart at elainelockhart.com. Before we let you go, and I may or may not have asked this of you the last time you were on the program or not, but I'm going to ask you just the same. And if you remember the questions, you can either elaborate on the answer you gave the last time or come up with a new one. And the first question is, who is Elaine Lockhart?
She's magic.
I like that. That's very good. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
To help people to be better and in turn have that radiate out to make the world a better place.
And what is your life's purpose?
Life's purpose is to be a healer, teacher, and mentor.
And I also extend to you the invitation, should you find yourself on the other side of the continent, here on the West Coast, Central Coast of California and Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
That would be a wonderful experience. Thank you.
And unless I manage to secure a large RV redesigned with a small little studio, and I'm traveling the world with it, I've actually already mapped out my global trip. I could actually hit almost all of the continents in an RV, but I would have travel across the Bering Strait in wintertime.
A lot of ferries in there you'd have to do.
Well, it could be. It very well could be. But anyway, we'd love to do that. And again, I thank you so much. Again, the website is ElaineLockhart.com and Elaine@ElaineLockhart.com. Certainly take her up on her invitation. Go to the bottom of the homepage where you can get a 15-minute complimentary connection chat with her. And we encourage you to do so and mention that you heard about her here on the program. And Elaine, again, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me back. I really enjoyed it.
And we will have you back again in 2017. I think that we can continue this conversation. I'm sure there'll be some new tools that you have acquired by that time.
Well, let's hope so.
Okay. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.